Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa. I'm your host. And in today's episode, I'm speaking with Lauren Conlin, lifestyle and contest prep coach who bridges the gap between aesthetics and food freedom. Lauren and I speak about the difference between eating disorders and disordered eating, when to consider therapy versus nutrition coaching, is tracking macros obsessive, and more. If you like the show, please subscribe and give us a rating or share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much. And as always, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes for more details. Now onto my conversation with Lauren. Lauren Conlin, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
It's my absolute pleasure. I'm really, really excited to talk to you. I have been very excited about our chat for quite some time, and it was such a pleasure meeting you a few months or weeks back in Missouri when you were giving us a wonderful presentation at the Fat Muscle Academy conference.
Thank you. That was such a great event. Oh my gosh, like top to bottom, what a great event. And I loved getting to meet you and getting to chat. And yeah, I've been looking forward to this as well.
Awesome. And yeah, I'd love to hear from you. What's the number one thing that you're looking forward to the listener taking away from our conversation today?
So I would really just love if someone was able to take it just a different perspective, maybe not like one thing, but just to look at a situation that you've already been looking at and just see it in a new light, or just even just contemplate it in a different way. So that's kind of my main hope, is that you can listen to something that maybe you've heard about this before, just kind of changes your point of view, opens your mind a little bit. That's really my goal and intention.
I think that's awesome because sometimes we might be doing something or focusing on something a little bit too much and wondering why it's not working, and simply like a small shift of perspective or of our stance can really initiate a big change. So really great. And I'd love to hear as well what actually got you into physique coaching. I know that you are sort of like providing a nice little bridge between focusing on aesthetics, but also having that food freedom that I'm all about as well. So please tell us a little bit about your journey.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I have been coaching for 12 years now. So I've been doing this for quite a while. And really, I got into this because I was someone who, started weight training in high school, started, got my personal training certification right out of high school, started training people, was into the whole fitness world and nutrition world. And I actually was a dietetics major first before I switched to exercise science. So I was always just like in all of this. And I was competing. And previously, I had had an eating disorder when I was very young. So I was kind of aware of like dietitians and this whole world. So it was kind of like merging of all of these worlds. And then pretty much one day, someone asked me, "Will you be my coach?" And that is how I started coaching. It was not this pre-planned glamorous thing. It was not, I saw someone on the internet do it. It literally was someone asked me because I had a coach and they knew me and they knew my journey and they wanted something similar. And that's how I started. And I was very, very small, word of mouth for quite a while. And then at the time, I was in my undergrad, graduated, and then was going to start my master's. And during that time period, I was also prepping, and I eventually turned pro in IFBB my first semester in grad school back in 2014. And then I had a couple friends who were coaches in the space, Lane Norton and Paul Ravella, and they were like, "Hey, you need to do this like legitimately. Like, you need to get an LLC. Like, you need to have an online payment processor. Like, you need to have a website." Because I was just kind of doing it like, "Oh, someone sent me this, So that's, started in 2013, became a little bit more, let's say, legitimate, 2014, and then really just kind of grew from there and just was sharing my journey and was coaching people who also were competitors at the time, probably more so competitors early on. And now my career has transformed quite a bit, fast forward 12 years. But now I coach still some competitors, but not as many. And my interests have certainly, of course, evolved as well.
Well, one thing I really admire about you is that you continue to push yourself also, and you continue to want to grow yourself, and you've actually gone back to school just recently. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, yes, I I'm just, I was like, how can I just do something else that's harder? And I just love school, and I always knew like I wanted to do something else, but it didn't feel right to go from my first degrees just to get the PhD because that's what everybody should do. It just didn't feel right. And so I sat on it for a while, and I just really, really felt this calling for counseling and therapy. And at first I was like, well, I'll just like, do I really need to go do this? Right. And I, for several years had educated myself on, psychology and mindset and behavior change and all these things on my own. But I started to really realize, like, no, this is actually a true calling. And I'm starting to really see the gap widen with physical and mental health. And there, the it needs to be getting smaller, if anything, and not wider. So I really wanted to be able to bring both of those worlds together because they often don't communicate, or they might, but they don't communicate very well. And I very much recognize I'm one person, so it's not like I'm going to change the entire field. But I thought, let me do something that I can, legitimately offer individuals like true help, because I mentioned, my clientele changed over the years, of course, as I evolved as well. And now I would say I work primarily with, women who maybe they have competed previously, maybe they still would like to, but many of them haven't. But they have fallen into a lot of these very restrictive patterns over the years. They've fallen into maybe not eating disorders, but kind of disordered eating, disordered mindsets around food, and just really struggle in a lot of ways. And maybe it's not diagnosable, quote unquote, but it is enough to hinder their life. And it's enough for them to engage in this constant yo-yo process and not feel good about their bodies or themselves. So I was like, I kind of want to do this in a more legitimate way, because I started to uncover things with clients and I was like, poof, I do not have the skill set to help someone through this. I don't need to, but I wanted to. So that's kind of what led me here. And I just finished, at the time of recording, I finished my second semester this week. So, and summer starts soon, and I'll be actually starting my first internship this summer as well. So my first clinical hours. So yeah, we're in it. I am in the thick of it right now.
Love it, love it, love it. And you are transitioning us very nicely to what I wanted to speak to you about anyway, which is a part of what you presented on in Missouri. For example, you already touched on disordered eating patterns versus eating disorders. Can you give us a bit of a differentiation there? And then, yeah, let's start with that.
Definitely. And I love that you already opened with this, because there are many people who consider them the same thing and they are not. And I think we do need to be careful with our language of how we share certain things. So disordered eating is more of, these kind of patterns and beliefs and behaviors around food that are disordered. Maybe they are troubling to an individual, and maybe they do create some distress. But they are things that, kind of come and go, and maybe their severity isn't quite as much. Whereas a diagnosable eating disorder, and within the DSM, which is pretty much what any kind of mental health practitioner will use to, code or diagnose something, there are several within there. So anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, and now binge eating disorder is actually a disorder within the DSM, which it previously wasn't. There's other food related things like pica, so eating things that are not food related, but that's outside of the topic for today. So for those main three, whenever you are diagnosing someone with something, you look at frequency, onset, and duration. So is the frequency all the time, or a lot, right? So when someone, let's say maybe they purge every once in a while, not a behavior that we want someone to be doing really ever, but maybe they do it once a year. Versus someone who's purging 3 times a week and they've done that for the past year. That's very different in severity. Doesn't mean the first individual doesn't need to work through that, but it is going to be very different. It's also just the intensity of the distress and how, distressing not only to the individual, but to every other relationship in their life. If someone maybe struggles, this is where I work with a lot of clients, They have food anxiety. They get nervous going out to eat. They really struggle to maybe not track their macros so perfectly. Those kinds of things. That is different than someone who will not go out to eat. Their relationships, they've isolated themselves completely, whether it's, romantic or friendship or family or all of those. They have this intense fear of, gaining weight or so there it's just really the intensity of it and how long it is going on for. So, when people say things, and that does frustrate me sometimes when people will throw those labels around, like, oh, tracking macros, it gave this person an eating disorder. And it's like, whoa, 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 we gotta be a little bit more careful with how we say things, and not to be the word police, because certainly I know people say things that don't always mean them, but just because someone maybe has a little bit of a disordered behavior around that doesn't mean they have an eating disorder. That also doesn't mean that we shouldn't take that seriously. So I think we just need to be, it's kind of like people say OCD. Oh, I'm so OCD. Well, OCD is very, very distressing for individuals who do have that. Maybe you have some OCD tendencies or patterns. So it's kind of the same thing with that, the disordered eating versus eating disorder. So yeah, there is a big differentiation, and I would say it's mostly from that intensity and frequency of behaviors. Again, whether it's purging or binging or any kind of compensatory behavior.
Thank you for explaining that so clearly. And it's almost like you have seen my list of notes here because
Oh, well, I have not, everybody.
I truly wanted to ask you if how you would respond or what your thoughts are when someone says tracking macros, etc., does trigger certain obsessive food behaviors.
Now, there is always a, asterisk. There's always a but this. There's always a it could have, like, nothing in life is ever 100%. Like, zero things are like that outside of, death. So there's that. But when someone is so strong with their language, I would very much encourage everyone who's listening to kind of put your antennas up when someone is like, this is the way, this is not the way. If someone is saying that, that should also mark concern. So that's just a side kind of note. But can tracking macros create an eating disorder? Potentially, yes. For the vast majority of people, probably not. And there are levels to all different types of things. And that is where we have to use, call it a level, call it a gradient, call it a continuum, however you want to conceptualize this in your mind. But we really have to start to think of, okay, tracking macros can be done. Yes, while it's, tracking three numbers and weighing food, the way that it happens can look different for like we could do this like 15 different ways. And maybe the individual who is tracking ultra, ultra rigidly is developing more of these issues. It's also not just one thing that creates an eating disorder. And that is one thing that I really am against is when people say like this creates that. No, it doesn't. Just people use this for bodybuilding all the time. Oh, bodybuilding created this. Well, bodybuilding is neutral. You are bringing in your own unique composition, your own background, your own experiences, and that's what's driving this. So I do think that for certain individuals, tracking macros would be contraindicated, but it doesn't mean that it's a bad thing. It doesn't mean it has an inherent negative value. And I think that it's also important to recognize that there's multiple different ways that someone could track macros. Everyone's going to laugh, but I never have used a tracking app to track any of my food when I used to do that. Most people would say, how is that possible? Well, I have a lot of notes. I have a lot of pieces of paper. I used to have notebooks everywhere, or, in a phone, whatever it might be. I used to just write it down. And I also have kind of the mind that does mental math with certain things. So it just was easy for me. But I started to realize as a coach, like, wow, a lot of people are actually having issues, not really with tracking, but with this app. And they became like hyper fixated on like zeroing out. I'm like, what is a zero out? Like, I never even like thought of those things, right? I also recognized that one of the byproducts of having to go look things up or memorize them or whatever is I would then have a very concrete knowledge of what it was versus a lot of people will track, never think about it again. So they're not really learning about food. They're just putting something into an app and like dumping it there. So there are certain protective mechanisms I built in by not tracking, right? So there's just different ways to do this. So you could say to someone, oh yeah, you could very rigidly zero everything out perfectly in this app and use a food scale every single day. Or you could maybe write this down, or you could estimate, or you could eyeball, or you could have ranges. Like, right, like there's all these different ways that we could do something.
Yeah, there's so much in that, and I love that example of like learning as when you're not actually tracking that rigidly, or when you're putting in the work yourself and not just relying on the app. I have a similar example, not to that extent, but for about half a year, I was living more or less in like a glamping tent, and I didn't have a food scale with me. I didn't want to buy one, but I kept tracking just by estimating things. I had like a cup measure and stuff. And I was like, I stayed at the same weight and everything else, and just continuing to track actually felt good to me at the time. But I was just estimating, and sometimes people were like, "What's even the point to continue to track?" I'm like, "You're kind of missing what tracking is about. Like, it's about that awareness still." And I've actually before that had already practiced, like before I placed things on the scale, I would always think to myself, does this look like 6 ounces of chicken or four? And then have that confirmation with the scale, not just placing it on there and like not even thinking about it twice and learning from it. So really, really good example. And to the point of being too rigid with your tracking, also, I think as a coach, we sometimes need to listen very closely how people report things back to us or what they ask us. So, for instance, I've had a client who has sent me like a few screenshots, and she was like, which one of these raspberry logs is correct? Is it like 73 calories or 71? And I'm like, oh, okay, we need to talk about this because this doesn't actually matter that much. Or, well, should I track this tablespoon of vinegar as 4 calories or five? And then you need to kind of like explain or talk to the person about it. Cool, I think it's awesome that you're asking me about this. I just want to explain that, even a calorie, the best estimated calorie target I give you is just an estimation. Even the best log in there is just an estimation. Like, they don't know if you have a super ripe apple or if it's like an apple that's pretty green still, right? Like, there could be a difference of 20 calories or more in there, depending on the size of the apple. So I love the tool of just working with ranges with people where you can kind of like note that they're a little bit too OCD and just be like, hey, this week I would love for you to just aim for 1800 to 2000 calories and roughly, 120 to 140 grams of protein. That's it. I don't want you to think about anything else. Don't even look at the exact carb or fat distribution. I do think that that can be quite helpful for some people.
Oh, so much. And that's where individual differences matter. So, as an example, if somebody were to tell me to track protein and calories, I would not. That would be more mental work for me than tracking carbs, fats, and proteins personally. Many clients come to me, though, and they say, no, I want to do calories and protein. Unless you are a physique competitor or you're making weight for something, that probably doesn't matter. Now, I will say, if someone is not making as much progress, and they're like, hey, can I make faster progress? Okay, well, we should probably be more consistent here, right? So there's always a nuance. But in general, we have to look at how, what is easier for someone, because ultimately, we need someone to be able to stick to this for a long time. And you said it perfectly with what is the point of tracking? The point of tracking is not to have perfect numbers, it's to have that awareness and to stay pretty close. Because if you're able to stay pretty close, you're going to be in a position where you're probably happy with, how you're feeling, how you're looking, how you're performing, digesting, all of those types of things. But it's when we have these massive ups and downs, which is what most people struggle with. And again, most people that I work with struggle with that type of yo-yo diet, either mindset or behaviors or both. That is what we really have to try to break. And we have to figure out how can we, what strategies can we use to do that.
Really, really good point there. And so I guess if as a coach you kind of notice that maybe something is quite challenging or someone might have an eating disorder as opposed to disordered eating pattern, how would you go about that?
Yeah, if someone presents where they are like, and this is someone that I've been working with who maybe hasn't been diagnosed with this before. Because that's how I've had it both ways. I've had it, people come in and they say, "Hey, I have this," or "I had this," or we kind of unravel it as we work together. At this point, I say I can't be the only provider. I need to make sure that you are having a mental health counselor in the mix. Doesn't mean you need to be, at a live-in facility. Maybe, but probably not quite there yet. But I need someone else in the mix who is working on this, because to be fair, most counselors are working on, of course, the mental side of things, the thought patterns, the behaviors, the potential trauma, whatever else is going on. They're not really talking about the food, because that's not what we're trained to do. So they are working on that, but I could still help with, hey, let's, what are some of these behaviors or things that we can do, or change or not do? And often it's not even about doing more, it's about taking things away with clients. That's a whole other thing. But and then we can work kind of synergistically. But I want to make sure that I'm not the only person, because oftentimes I've found that with clients who have any type of eating disorder or something very challenging that's presenting itself, it's never about the food. It's always about something else. So that's where at this point I'm not licensed to be able to really peel back. I can kind of, I always say I can get people to the door, but I can't get them through the door at this point. So that's where I like to do that. Now, if someone comes to me and they said, "Hey, I've had an eating disorder," or "I currently do," or insert that kind of language, it's more fresh, it's more new, and I've started to get more of this because it's kind of, again, what I talk about. I want to make sure that, again, they are seeing some kind of a provider, and then I have more of an open-ended, loose kind of conversation of, listen, I want to almost trial this to see if I'm helping, because I want to actively be helping you, not hurting you. So if someone is struggling in that instance now, because like I mentioned, a lot of people who are working with clients with eating disorders, they're focused on all this other stuff, but the client is still struggling with these like food rules and food things. So that's where I can help step in, but I want to be very clear and say, listen, like I want to make sure that this is still, that this is a good fit, and every time we do meet, it's a positive something. So I usually want to make sure that I'm not the only person kind of in that network. And I would say that this goes for anyone listening who maybe is feeling like they're struggling with these kinds of things, or really anything that maybe is in more of the realm of a counselor. And I find that coaches are often in this position where clients, thankfully, not everybody, but clients will feel comfortable talking to their coach about some of these issues. Maybe it is, it's not just because everybody has anxious thoughts. That's kind of baseline. Everybody has stress. Everybody can have depressive feelings at certain points in time, but there's a difference of that, kind of like the disordered eating versus eating disorder. There's that. And then there's people who have, clinical levels of this. And if a client is feeling comfortable to share those things with you, that is where you as a coach have to say, really appreciate that you're sharing this with me. But I feel like it would maybe be time for us to explore you talking to someone about these things. And this is especially true when very like traumatic things come up, or marriage. I work with a lot of clients who, obviously are having marriage issues, or having all the different things that are, infertility, miscarriages, issues with their kids, like all these kinds of things. And as coaches, we're not required to do anything with that information. We could, talk about it, we could bypass it, we could whatever. But ultimately, I just want to make sure that someone is getting the help they need. If they're just venting one day, that's fine. But if it's a recurrent pattern where now I'm seeing again the severity of this is increasing, this is where you have to say, hey, feel like it might be best. So if you are a client who is starting to feel like that is maybe overtaking what maybe you and the coach are doing, that might be where it's nice to have someone else in the mix as well, because coaches can only really do so much in certain areas, and we want to make sure that you're getting really the help that you need in those spaces as well. And that also just augments any work that a coach does. So it's a very synergistic relationship.
And I actually think,
Unless the therapist says, "Oh, you have an eating disorder because you're tracking macros." So that's, you're gonna have that, because
that
I've
would
also run
be
into
a
those
little bit of a red
issues.
flag for the therapist. But I think
Yes.
it certainly is a actually a sign of strength for the coach if you can admit that, hey, this is a little bit out of my scope, this is a little bit out of my area of expertise, or I alone am not sufficient here. So I think if anyone listening who is a coach is considering that about their own clients, it's actually a strength if you approach the client and say, like, hey, I think we need to have another person here in the mix for sure.
100%. And if you are someone listening who has a coach or want to hire a coach, if you do hear that, don't take that negatively because it doesn't mean that someone's trying to pawn you off. It does mean that, hey, maybe I'm out of the scope. Now, I talked about this a little bit in the presentation, so I want to touch on it slightly. I think there is a big difference though between because I know coaches who are just like, oh, at the first sign of anybody having a something mental health, they're like, oh, bye, can't do it, gonna drop you. That's also inappropriate, in my opinion. There's a lot that can be done between here versus like weekly therapy sessions. Like we can still do some things with clients. And so I don't think it's that you can't, if somebody is like has any of these issues that you can't work with them, or that you should drop your coach right away because you're like, oh, this is over, unless it is kind of, if it's overtaking your life and you really need to focus on that, it's a different story. But I feel like there, of course, is this middle ground that we could work through, and maybe it is just starting to bring more awareness to these kinds of things, because most coaches and clients have a very intimate relationship. Because if you're a coach who's creating a space where your clients can share things with you, which that's how my clients feel, I know your clients feel the same way, that we hear a lot of things honestly first. I hear a lot of firsts from people. I hear a lot of, you're the only person that I'm telling this to, kinds of things. And I take that very seriously. So I think, okay, how can I, sometimes it's just being a listening person. Sometimes that's all that someone needs is just to be heard. Other times it's, let's create a strategy. And then other times it's like, hey, we've tried this for a little while, and I don't think that I'm maybe going to be able to get you past this level. So I think that there's a gradient there as well. And we shouldn't just at the first sign of someone being anxious say, oh, can't help you. You probably have anxiety disorder. That's also very inappropriate as a coach.
Yeah, and I think like with so many things in life, a multifaceted approach can work really, really well if done correctly and if done in synergy as well. From here, I'd love to kind of shift into a post-diet phase, whether it's a competitor or someone who was just in a deficit for a long time, because as you, as a former competitor, will know, oftentimes at that tail end or even in the earlier stages of the reverse diet, the food noise is really loud. You do have obsessive food thoughts. You probably like some of the practices I've heard of or read of, as well as like you eat everything, with a tiny spoon just so it lasts longer. You eat for volume with everything that you can. You chew a package of gum. Like you just never feel full. All these kinds of things, and someone
Oh, yeah.
might think, okay, is this disordered now, or is this just the post-diet phase? And like, how would you personally go about differentiating between one or the other? What's still quote unquote healthy and what isn't?
Yeah, there is a lot of overlap between lifestyle clients and athletes, a ton of overlap. But there are very distinct differences. And I would say that the biggest difference for a physique athlete, of course, is the level of leanness and what that means for the individual. And if you were to, on the surface, look at a lot of bodybuilding behaviors, they do look a little problematic, a little disordered. But as always, what matters is, can someone drop into this for a predetermined amount of time? And then can they move out of this? I don't know one bodybuilder who by the end of their prep, things aren't a little weird. Like things are kind of weird. You're kind of hyper fixated on what you look like, because that's quite literally what the sport is about. So, like, you're going to be obsessed. You're going to be mirror checking. You're going to be tracking everything perfectly. You're going to have all these weird thoughts about food because you're 10% body fat. Like, that's normal. If you didn't feel like that, I'd be like, do you have a pulse? Are you okay? Like, what's going on? with the exception that clients who are just naturally really lean and they don't have to get like their off season to competition body fat is less of a swing. Those clients usually can kind of hack it a little bit more. They're like, yeah, I feel fine, but they're just naturally leaner, so they kind of just get the benefit of that. For people like me, that's not me. I'm not, it's just I got to lose a lot of body fat to get on stage. Just is what it is. So by the end of it, stuff's kind of weird. But am I able to get out of that within those, that kind of post diet window? For competitors, I always like to say it's about 4 to 12 weeks, so kind of on average about 8 weeks. That's kind of the first month is kind of that danger zone. Like, especially someone doesn't place as well as they anticipated, that can really throw a wrench in the plans. Or when someone really has nothing else going on outside of bodybuilding, that's really when things get dicey, because then they're like, okay, now what? When I have clients who, have families, they have jobs that are not fitness related, they have all these other things going on, they generally can kind of transition a little bit easier. But I would say for those clients, yeah, after that 12-week mark, and that's being generous, but after about 8 to 12 weeks, if someone is not seeing improvements there, that's kind of when I'm like, something's going on, but that can happen. So it's not like it's shocking, but we want to make sure that that's kind of like when like the alerts go up for me. Now, most of the post diet, like all of the metabolic adaptations, all those physiological and psychological changes that are happening, are very much driven by body fat. We know this. But for many individuals, what is keeping them in this kind of suppressed state is that they've lost muscle mass. And when we are in a recovery phase afterwards, our body wants to rebound with body fat. And what happens when individuals who are lifestyle clients who have maybe dieted too aggressively, haven't resistance trained enough, didn't have enough muscle to begin with, they lose some, and now afterwards they're regaining weight, but it's mostly all body fat. Now they're in this position where that's the yo-yo diet cycle that really is a problem. So it's different than the post-diet phase of like a competitor, but it's still kind of just as much of a problem. It just looks a little bit different. So all of those drivers are still there, and I would say that it is certainly largely body fat related, but it's really that loss of fat-free mass that is really troubling for a lot of people's bodies. And that's where they could get to this position where they're like, how do I keep looking worse every time I do this? And that is really what we want to avoid for. So I would say that while it looks on the surface different, that maybe like lifestyle clients wouldn't struggle so much in that way, they still do, but it's not because of just the body fat.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of great points in here. So first of all, I think what I hear you say from that last point there, I believe is the importance of just trying to maintain as much muscle mass as we can throughout a dieting phase is absolutely crucial. Through resistance training, through a sufficient amount of protein, of course. And number two, I think it's also just so important to acknowledge that all these things are physiological. There's nothing wrong with you in your mind. It's like literally your body is programmed to try and keep you alive. So literally, that's why you're so hyper food focused. And I think, yeah, again, nothing wrong with with the mind. It's just literally hunger signals, satiety signals, everything is being programmed in the sense of hey, seek out food. And I love what you said about having an outside life. To not make that all that you are and not make that your hyper focus. Like, even this morning, I was speaking to a client. Unfortunately, right now, she's between jobs. She had an injury, so she can't move. And all she thinks about all day, because she's kind of locked in her apartment, is food. And she's like, what's wrong with me? I can't stop thinking about food. I'm like, there's absolutely nothing wrong with you. You have just nothing going on. Like, if you have 15 hours a day or whatever to think about food, that's what your body is gonna do because the food is like right there. So honestly, don't blame yourself. Like, try to look for other things. And we just came up with the plan of like You heard starting some sort of course that she can do online, making a little bit of a timeline of like, okay, I'm gonna spend half an hour cleaning the apartment. I'm gonna do half an hour, like just some sort of like routine, so she's not just thinking about the food in the fridge all day long. And I think
Yes.
the last thing I wanted to say to this point is, you also mentioned that, especially if you get too lean or if you get to stage leanness, like accepting that just with the increase of body fat post show in a healthy way and in a very healthy way, your hunger signals will stabilize again. So that is, I think, a little bit the difference there between someone who doesn't get quite that lean and doesn't necessarily need to regain the body fat. But yeah,
Yes.
normally that should stabilize a lot of things, shouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, it becomes this obsession to your point, because it quite literally is. Your body's like, "Hey, what's going on?" Like, this is not normal. And that's where it's always like we have to look at things in context. And I love the example you gave with that client, and that's really unfortunate for her. But I'm glad you guys were able to create some kind of a strategy, and it's really like something to look forward to. So you have to think about, are you having a normal reaction to a situation that is maybe not so great? So, and are we labeling that as a problem when it's just like that would be a human emotion? And I love that there is much more discussion on, mental health and feelings and emotions and all of these things. But I think to almost a certain degree, it's become some things have become pathologized that don't need to be. Like, you're having an anxious thought because you're in an anxiety-provoking situation. That's normal. If you weren't, you actually would probably have some kind of psychopathology if you didn't have a that's like that is normal to have a dramatic response. If someone has just lost someone or gone through something really hard and they're grieving, that's normal. If 2 years later they still feel the same way, that's that then we need to step in. So it's like if someone has just dieted, they're going to be hungry. And it's interesting. I feel like this has come up a little bit over the past. I always love how things just kind of come in waves and come up in different conversations. I feel like there's this kind of almost this thing happening where people are like, yeah, I want to diet and I want to look this way, but like, I don't want to feel like this. And it's like, well, we have really yet to figure out how to achieve that without these things, outside of potentially maybe Ozempic, which is not a solution for everybody, certainly. But I really don't know anybody who diets and loses body fat and keeps it off without feeling some kind of hunger, and even not just hunger, but having some kind of restraint to say no to certain things and say yes to other things. Like, this is what we have to do. And so it's really interesting where sometimes we almost pathologize things like, oh my God, hunger is not good. You shouldn't feel. And this is where the coaches who are selling you this pipe dream, someone's telling you that you can do all this and not feel this way. You should just run the other way, because that's just not how it works.
Yeah,
And
and to
it's,
your point, I think in
ugh.
the same category, like if people think they can be happy all day long, right? Like it's normal to have a sad thought. You're not very likely not clinically depressed because you have had
Nope.
a couple of sad thoughts this morning or something like that.
Yeah, you are a person, like you had this thought. Something troubling came up, and unless people choose to quite literally live in this self-contained vacuum where they do not let anybody in, which some people do that, and I would not recommend, but some people do that, or they try to, and anybody who tries to get in is like, oh, you're just negative energy, you can't be a part of my life. It's like, it's not sustainable to do that, and I'm not suggesting that people stay in situations that are bad for them, obviously not. But I think that there's just like this realism aspect that has kind of left the chat. It's like the people who are like, yeah, have a $1 million business and work 3 hours a day, like just open can I love the open Canva and create a graphic and sell it to this many people, and you'll be, shut the fuck. Oh my God. I'm like, I can't. Like, I almost want to start making like joke videos like that. You know what I mean? And just like say these ridiculous things and just be like, who's actually like, oh my gosh, yes, I should just open Canva and sell five plants. Like, what? Oh,
Yeah,
yeah.
again, that actually brings me really nicely to a question I wanted to ask, because you bring out wonderful information on your social media. You have such great content. I love your real approach to everything. And one of the posts
Thank
that you had
you.
up just recently was kind of like why AI will never replace coaches. I'd love to hear your explanation on that.
Well, I would be the first to say that I am not the most tech savvy as a baseline, but especially AI savvy. I've used ChatGPT twice in my whole life. As a prompt, I'm not I've become more accepting of it. I have some philosophical reasons as to why I don't like it in certain capacities, but that's a whole different conversation. But I do think it can be valuable. I certainly am just behind the mark because
Same. Me too.
I didn't use a food tracking app. Okay, so you think I'm going to be on AI? No. But I do recognize that AI has a lot of capabilities, and kind of like the internet and kind of like social media, these things aren't going anywhere. Now that people know that they exist, now that this many people use them, outside of, living in a community that you create yourself off the grid, I don't think it's going away. So how do we live with these kinds of things? I do believe that AI is getting much better. I know it's getting much better. I know that it basically learns the individual and it says things in a way that can kind of confirm what the individual is saying, which is also kind of why I get nervous with it. But I truly don't believe that in our lifetime, that it is going to be able to replace the nuance of a person, of a human interaction, and just the way, even if, let's say I am doing a session with someone, nutrition, counseling, whatever it might be, could AI say those same things? Maybe. Are there a subset of individuals who would like that delivery better? Maybe. The majority of people, we are wired for human connection, and the nuance and the creativity and all those things that like only humans can provide each other. So I really don't think that we in our lifetime are going to be replaced in that sense. Now, if someone is just giving out numbers or very basic things, could they be replaced? Absolutely. And we've obviously seen that. Like that is by no means like I'm not saying if you're just telling someone, here are these numbers, here's this basic stuff, but if someone is giving you, if you're doing the type of coaching where someone is giving you a lot of different like feedback in a lot of different areas and you're trying to synthesize that into one kind of answer and really like give them again that like human experience, that human response, don't feel like AI is quite there yet. And I also feel like, again, not everybody, clearly, but I do feel like there's more people than ever that want a human interaction. I think that we've seen a resurgence in-person personal training for this reason. We've seen why certain things like, small group training or individual training or any kind of community-based things, people are wanting that. And certain, there's a subset of people I think who are. I think it's like diverging. I think there's some people who want more technology, they want less human interaction, they want more of these things, but I there are subset who want more human, less things. And I think especially because many people now are working from home or maybe are just more kind of like lonely in their life in general, having a human interaction is something that they're like looking forward to. So do I think that AI is getting better and it has a lot of capabilities? Absolutely. But I think that like the nuance and the humanness of it, and just truly feeling like you're understood by someone is not gonna replace it,
I'm
in my opinion.
100%. No, I'm 100% with you. And I don't know the exact quote or even who it was by, but you know, that whole thing of people might not remember you or what you did for them, but they will always remember how you made them feel. I have yet to meet a person that was like, AI made me feel so good about myself today. I feel like I had this incredible day because of AI versus, you know, someone saying like, whoa, I had this awesome conversation with Lauren. I really felt heard. For the first time, I was like, she gets me, man. I don't think that AI can like bring someone to tears in a positive way or so. Maybe like, again, like to your point, who knows? There's people like that out there, but probably not the kind of people
Yes.
that you and I attract, hopefully.
Exactly. And I think that that's really where you have to say, like, okay, who, for whether it's, coaches who are listening to this or just people, anyone really who's listening to this, who are you trying to attract into your life? What are the experiences you're trying to have? And it's the same thing with in-person. Think about the amount of in-person events that you've gone to versus the amount of online learning that you've done. I facilitate online learning. I attend online learnings. I think they're great. They offer a lot of flexibility. They offer all the things that online things offer. We all know that. But how much better, like how much more enriching were, the event that we met at, like that connection with everybody. And even if it was small, but just like it's so different and it cannot be replaced. And that's just like, millions of years of evolution for us as humans. So I think
Absolutely.
we're a lot of things are getting knocked out. I know that, but I don't think that one is going away. And I think that is why there's so much disconnect with individuals at this point. It's just because we've always thrived in certain types of communities, and now that is so different for a lot of people that it's kind of fracturing certain people's like just sense of self and how they want to show up in the world.
Yeah, unfortunately, I totally agree with you, and I do hope that people are seeing the value in more face-to-face things, investing in in-person events, investing in that human connection, hopefully. But yeah, Lauren, thank you so much for your time today, for
Of
explaining all
course.
wonderful insights to us. I will most certainly link all your handles in the show notes. People have to go and
Perfect.
check out your content and just getting to know you better and online
Thank
as
you.
well. So thank you so much for your time. It's been a true pleasure.
Yes, this was great. Thank you so much. If anybody has any questions, feel free to reach out to me.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Lauren. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. And remember, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go, if you're looking for premium supplements, our partner, Fat Muscle Project, has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more. And feel free to use our code NCL for your chance to win a $250 gift card every month. Thank you for listening.